You're listening to The Top Line, brought to you by Fierce Pharma and Fierce Biotech. I'm your host, Ayla Ellison. In today's episode, Gabrielle Mason and Max Bayer, two writers from Fierce Biotech, join us. They discuss the ongoing issue of layoffs in the biotech industry, which continues despite initial hopes for recovery from 2023. Using data from Fierce Biotech's layoff tracker, they delve into the specifics of the layoff trends in the first quarter of 2024 and compare them to previous years. Despite a bumpy start to the year, they also touch on some positive signs in the industry. Let's dive into the conversation now.
The biotech industry was really hoping this year would bring some reprieve from 2023's brutal bear market. Unfortunately, biopharma layoffs don't really seem to be letting up, at least not for the first quarter of the year. I'm here with Max Bayer to discuss data from Fierce Biotech's layoff tracker. Hi, Max. How are you?
Hi, Gabby. Thank you for joining me, even though it's a kind of morbid subject, which I feel like we've been talking about for a while, but happy to be here and chat.
It's not the most uplifting thing to talk about, but I think we do some really important work, bring some transparency to the industry. So we'll talk about layoffs.
What was the story that you worked on?
So I crunched some of the data from the Fierce Biotech layoff tracker, and you know, I put together a quarterly analysis of the data that we have. So what we're going to talk about, the data is a little different than the story that I wrote since more data has been added retroactively to March. Max, do you want to kind of explain how we get some of our like layoff scoops and why some of that data is kind of added retroactively after the month is over?
You know, the layoff tracker is primarily driven by news that we find, you, me, the rest of the Fierce Biotech team, and oftentimes that'll come in an earnings report. Sometimes a company will disclose it as part of its own news update. A lot of times they're tips that we're given and we chase them down and we get company confirmation or we aggregate additional sources. So sometimes what will happen is folks will reach out to us and just kind of flag people who follow the tracker and they'll say, hey, looks like you missed a company, or heads up, this is what I'm hearing, this is what I've heard. And so that's why we will update and backfill monthly tallies based off what we hear after the fact. I think to your point, this is a really good example where you wrote this story, but then I tacked on another company to March that announced layoffs in its fourth quarter earnings report that we didn't originally see.
And I just wanted to flag too, like those tips that we get are so important, especially for the private biotechs, because there just isn't a lot of like public documentation for those. So we really appreciate any and all tips that we get.
One quick thing about the tips too, is I feel like for folks who maybe are listening and who are people who have given us tips in the past, is we do have an editorial protocol to chase them down. So I totally understand sometimes if folks give us a tip and it doesn't show up in the layoff tracker, that can sometimes be because a company declined to comment or we couldn't find more sources, which it's not because we're ignoring people. It's just that sometimes it's hard to actually get these things vetted and confirmed.
Initially, I reported that the number of layoff rounds occurring in the first quarter of this year was exactly the same as the first quarter of last year. So for 2023, with 57 rounds recorded for those first 3 months. But that new March edition just meant it was actually higher than last year's quarter one. So there were 58 layoff rounds reported this year for the first quarter.
Yeah, it's a shocking figure, I think, only because the sentiment in the industry is so much different in this first quarter than last quarter. This year, between sort of the M&A around the JPM time, we've seen a ton of nine-digit financings in the private market. The larger sentiment, and also most importantly, has been the potential for the Federal Reserve to cut rates, which I think is really what people are waiting for. But it's like, the data doesn't lie. So I think it just shows that there's still this haves and have-not culture, which people have used to refer to the industry at this point. And 58 companies laying people off, which again, is just what we know, just what we've confirmed, is tough. It's a really tough pill to swallow for folks who have, it's the people who are below the C-suite. This has been incredibly difficult for them.
Sometimes even the C-suite. Those numbers for this year and last year are just way higher than 2022's first quarter, when only 30 biopharmas reported layoff rounds. But the high numbers both this year and last year just demonstrate how slow market recovery can be.
Right. And to your point, in 2022, which I believe is when we started the layoff tracker, that quarter, that for us, like that at the time was sort of the beginning of worrisome. So for like layoffs to essentially have doubled in 2023 and maintained that pace in 2024, instead of maintaining that pace, like they've essentially just copied and pasted each other, that's demoralizing in a way that even though sentiment and optimism has improved, that it isn't necessarily reflected in like the total opportunities. Obviously, it's worth mentioning that as some companies close or they lay people off, there are other ones that open. So I think like someone could counter this data and be like, yeah, but you're not tracking kind of new company opening. So I think there's a fair counterpoint of just what the larger ecosystem looks like. And I think people in the Boston area particularly have reported that there's still a ton of hiring and growth in that area.
And I would argue that we do have kind of the other side of it. It's not a hiring tracker, but we have our fundraising tracker. We can see companies that are raising big private rounds. And those are normally on the flip side of it. So companies that are growing and expanding and just talking with people like biotech workers and communities, like the people are often, you know, recycled back into other biopharma companies. So all hope is definitely not lost, but it's still, like you said, like all those people are still losing their jobs.
What does the data show us just in 2024 when it's broken down month by month? Was there a month that really stood out in the data?
So January was the worst comparatively to February and March. So there were 24 different rounds. And I just remember us starting off the year and we were like so hopeful kind of, and they just kept coming. So there were 24 different rounds compared to 16 in February and 18 in March. Maybe there's like a slowdown there. We'll kind of see what April and the second quarter will bring. I know like a lot of people have definitely pinned recovery on this summer, I would say, but that depends just on the macro environment too. I know several biotechs laying off staff this quarter did cite, you know, the current market environment as a contributing reason for their workforce reductions.
That's a fair point. I think it also remains to be seen whether the presidential election plays any impact on people's sentiment or just stock shakeups. I know that has a bit of an impact on companies deciding to go public. I'm not sure how much of an impact it has on folks like Cash Runways who are private, but I guess remains to be seen as one trend that folks have been monitoring with respect to larger fiscal trends in the biotech industry. So we'll see if that plays any role as well. And to your point, it does look like last year, comparing it to 2023, January had a smaller number of layoffs compared to February and March. Last year, February was the 24 company layoff. That was definitely the bulk of the 57 that you had tallied. And then March had another 20 companies. So it's pretty evenly distributed, but interesting to your point. Yeah, I remember like we were both at JPM, just you're talking to these investors and the companies and everyone is bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and they're like excited to make deals. And then at the same time, we're like reporting layoffs early. It was just this really stark difference in terms of perception and reality. And at the same time, there were deals and there has been a lot of sign of hope, but not across the board.
Yeah. And it's hard too, because of course, layoffs are like, I don't want to say a normal part of business, but they occur in the broader market. And in biotech specifically, like when there are clinical trial failures, those are going to happen, especially after science doesn't pan out the way that it was thought it would. Like that's what the whole biotech is based on. And then it doesn't work out that way. Beyond that, another kind of interesting thing about this quarter was the pretty large big pharma presence. Of course, pharmas also regularly undergo turnover, but 8 of them laid off staff in this quarter, several of which underwent more than one round. So I think that's notable. Max, you broke the story actually about J&J shutting down its Brisbane, California R&D site in February. So I think that was over a weekend you broke that story. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, sure. It was the next chapter in this larger kind of restructuring saga. I've been reporting on it. J&J, basically, they had this massive R&D site south of San Francisco in a town called Brisbane, right next to South San Francisco, the official city name. And it had only been open a year and a half, less actually, and closed and has taken a lot of jobs with it, in large part because that facility opened to support the infectious disease and vaccine unit that we now know is closed. So the ID and V closures we reported on last year, first it was a restructuring, then it was a full divestment from R&D. They still have a few assets, though they're under sort of a global health umbrella. But what was interesting to me and about the J&J story was not only, I think, the fair sort of assessment of waste. Obviously, plans change, but I think that there was some criticism post-story of people being like, how was this not budgeted accordingly to keep the site? But there was also an element that there were RNA and some gene editing teams at that site as well. So it actually further illuminated where the company was divesting from beyond just infectious diseases and vaccines. Worth noting that I think J&J plans to open another innovation center in the area. I would imagine it's a smaller facility than the one they have now. There hasn't been a lot of additional details there, but that will be worth bearing to see if they're able to keep some people who are working out of the site or whether most will have to go. So still some more reporting to do there, which we'll try and get. But yeah, that was, I think, just the latest with respect to J&J. And just to speak to the larger trend that you alluded to, I remember speaking to a recruiter heading into 2023 who explicitly sort of outlined that what has been supporting the industry as a whole has been pharma hiring, pharma business development. And I think what you've seen, particularly as maybe some of the companies that invested a lot in COVID have wound back, is big pharma reeling in their spending. And so that obviously in the last quarter has been J&J, it's been Moderna, it's been layoffs at Mirati, which was acquired by BMS. Last year. And if we're going to date it back to last year as well, then you've obviously had thousands of people laid off at Pfizer. You had 1,000 laid off at Biogen. The layoffs at J&J began. There were some BMS cuts as well. So there are pharmas that are just trimming workforces across departments. So I think that is one of the driving trends that's scary is like from an investor standpoint, an acquisition is one of the best possible bits of news you can get. It's an exit. So that's a really interesting disconnect that I think it bears monitoring is what drives investor encouragement. And obviously investors are the foundation of everything here. They're the people who are financing the biotechs that go public, that get bought. And what happens to the employees afterwards? Because I think we've seen now it is rare, seemingly rare, I should say, before we have raw figures, but it's seemingly rare for a company to get bought and most of the staff are kept.
Do you think, though, investors care?
No. And I think that's what's hard. It's not that I think they don't care so much as it's a bit of a shrug.
Yeah, it doesn't really have to do with them per se, because once their investment is sold off.
Right. If you're an investor in Mirati who helped finance them or venture capital who helped finance them and they get bought by, what was it, like more than $4 billion when all was said and done? Then it's not like you're working at, it's not like you're the CEO of Mirati. You know, you're looking to get a return on investment and you can put that capital to new companies. So that's maybe the counterpoint. If someone were to be critiquing investors just for the larger cycle, they would say, yes, we recognize that we are a contributor to this trend. But at the same time, don't get mad at us because we're now taking the money we got from Mirati theoretically and putting it to 3 or 4 new companies that are going to be hiring as well. So that's fair. But I do just think that it's been an interesting like dichotomy of everyone seeing some of these early deals that percolated in January and being like, hell yeah, we're back, you know? And then if you're somebody who works at these companies, yes, you might get the financial incentive for that, but then also you might be looking for a job not soon after. And that's the catch-22.
Yeah, exactly. And it's the same exact disconnect that we were saying that like we experienced at JP Morgan. It's all the deals and it's all the layoffs.
I'm curious if you've seen this as well in the conversations that you've had with maybe some of these new companies that have launched. But from my vantage point, a lot of them too are really not hiring too much off the bat. I think in part to avoid some of these really early layoffs that we saw from well-financed private biotechs last year. Has that been something that companies have told you?
Yeah, compared to like 2022, every new company we would talk to who had like a Series A or Series B fundraise, it would be, we're expanding. We're like going from 10 to 40 people. We're growth mindset, everything like that. And now it's definitely, yeah, we will expand with the data, with the science. So definitely a lot more cautious. Yeah, I've noticed that as well, which I think is fair.
And it goes to a point that I think you mentioned previously, is maybe the hope in doing that is that there isn't such a workforce reduction risk if a first asset fails. If you've kept the team small, everyone's working on the same assets, then should one fail, the same group of people are looking at the next asset. That's really only possible if you're focused on one therapeutic area, so that, because people have specialties, of course. But I think that's what we've seen a lot, right? A lot of these biotechs are coming out and we're an autoimmune focused biotech, and this is our pipeline, and it's small, but that's the point. There seems to definitely be a shift, I think, in part because it behooves a biotech founder to then pitch itself as being really judicious with its funds and not being wasteful and then having to lay people off and contract soon after. But it is interesting because it is also then counteracting a little bit of what we just talked about. Yes, these new biotechs are starting, but they might not have more than 30 people for the first 2 or even 3 years that they've launched.
I feel like a word that we've heard, especially in 2023, and now it's still very relevant, is lean. Just biotechs are running as lean as they possibly can. And I think that's more normal than this explosion of excess that COVID allowed. Anyways, back to the big pharmas. I mean, there were names like you mentioned, Bayer, BMS, GSK, Takeda, Moderna, Roche, Pfizer, J&J, of course, all on this quarter layoff tracker, which you can check out on Fierce Biotech's site with all the latest updates, including some companies for April.
Gabby, I really appreciate you asking me on to the podcast for this episode. Of course, it's never really a good feeling to have to report this news, and it always feels somewhat invasive to be chronicling a tough time in folks' careers. But what we hope to do with this is to invite recruiters to companies who are looking for new staff. We rely on the tips that we get. I hope people continue to trust us at Fierce and trust you and I and our team to report on these. Keep pitching us. Whether you're at a big pharma or a small biotech, our point is really to shed light on changes to staff that maybe speak about a broader picture to development goals or the science and where things are headed. So that's my larger pitch for the tracker itself and for the work that we do. Thank you so much for getting this story together. It was terrific work. And here's to maybe hoping to report less of these in the next quarter and the quarters to come.
Thanks, Max. And thanks for joining me and chatting with me about it. And we'll be back. And hopefully the next time we talk about it, we have some more encouraging trends to report on.
That's it for The Top Line. I'm your host, Ayla Ellison. You can find out more about this topic in our show notes at fiercebiotech.com. Look for podcasts. And that's The Bottom Line from The Top Line.